The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to CIO Talk Radio with your host, Sunjo Gall. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers. Here's Sunjo Gall.
Welcome to CIO Talk Radio. Good morning, everyone. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Today's topic is healthcare IT, finding the EHR roadmap. And our guests for today's show are Bill Spooner, who is the Senior Vice President and CIO with Sharp Healthcare. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
I'm fine.
Beautiful. Now, we also have Daniel Barchi, he's the Senior Vice President and CIO with Carilion Health System. Good morning, Daniel.
Hello, Sanjog. How are you?
Very good, very good. So we spoke about, Daniel, you being in what, Virginia?
That's right. We're in Virginia, and it's a beautiful winter day. A little bit of snow coming down, but otherwise we're enjoying the weather.
So, Bill, are you joining the club in terms of snow, or are you enjoying the green pastures?
I am in sunny San Diego. The sun is just starting to come up here. And
See, that's it. I get all jealous and everything, you know.
Yeah, don't get too bad. You're welcome to visit. Leave your money here.
Yeah, I know that. So coming to this topic today that we are picking up, it is becoming quite a chronic issue for people, or in fact they're concerned now that on one side, the government says that they have to have a mandate, and there's a timeline by which they have to see the healthcare institutions following the guidelines and become, you know, implement EHR. Now, on the other side, most people that when you poll may not have a good idea about how to go about it. So with this being said, so are we stuck between a rock and a hard place, Bill?
Oh, I don't think that we're stuck between a rock and a hard place. Clearly, providers are at different levels of adoption, and clearly doctors practicing in small practices and independent offices have a harder time to actually do an implementation than a larger group practice whereby they can afford some of the staff and the implementation resource they need. But I think that, you know, EHRs are going to happen. It's just like any other industry. We've brought technology into package delivery. Our automobiles are controlled by computers. In healthcare, on the medical side, it is very, very computerized. And it's a question of making our records computerized so that we really have the best information and all the information when the clinician needs it when they're making a diagnosis.
Daniel, what do you see? Do you see the same optimism in this EHR implementation and or adoption going forward?
I agree with Bill. One thing that we need to take a step back and remember is that we have one of the world's finest healthcare systems, despite our conversations in D.C. about how we're going to pay for it. If you're going to get sick in the world, certainly the standard for medical care in the United States is very, very high. And at the end of the day, electronic health records are really a tool to help our physicians and our clinicians do a better job. And it is possible, and it has been possible for many years, to get just absolutely world-class care from somebody who uses their experience and the tools at their fingertips. I think that electronic health records have the potential and are bringing us to the next level of care using informatics. But whether it is a health system which is aggressively pursuing an EMR or a solo practitioner which has no plans to do so for a year or two, we can still expect that our clinicians are delivering good care.
Now, is this going to be all or nothing type of an adoption? Because if there's anyone in the weakest link along the value chain, then would you call it successfully adopted and or completed, Bill?
I don't think it's an all or nothing. I think that adoption is going to be progressive, and certainly some providers will be will be faster to come on board than others. But I think I think that adoption is going to last from now until forever as technology evolves, and there are new forms of diagnostic treatments and so forth that are developed. But for every physician that adds to the record that shares his information or her information with other providers, it's going to make collectively the information about the patient more robust, more complete. It will be disappointing until we do complete those last pockets in terms of bringing all the providers to the table. But realistically, I think we have to expect that it's going to be gradual. Not everybody could do it at once. Not all clinicians could afford to do it at the same time. We probably don't have enough implementation personnel in the whole country to do it all at once. And so I think we have to expect graduation, adoption to be just gradually improving over the years.
So why is there this pessimism, or why is there this skepticism around this being another, some of the program, if you will, put together by the government, which everybody else has to deal with, and it doesn't have as much value to it? And that whole mindset would further us from, further remove us from be able to, get the value out of it, which truly it has.
One of the things that I think is important to remember about what the federal government is trying to do is it's really accelerating what was happening anyway. So it was starting with visionary physicians in private practices and large hospitals, which could afford to do an integrated EMR. But the expectation was over time, like Bill said, we will all eventually adopt an electronic medical record. I think what the federal stimulus plan has done is accelerated that by as many as 10, perhaps 15 years. So even as recently as 2 or 3 years ago, we all knew that there would be seamless sharing of medical data at some point in our lifetimes. I think realistically, we might have thought that would have been 15 to 20 years out. But $2 billion of the $19 billion put aside by the federal government for the ARRA program is designed to create health information exchanges, which take what we're doing with EMRs and making it possible to share that data. And now we're looking at our horizons of 2 to 5 years for at least the early functionality of those, where we might have thought that would have been 10, 15, or 20 years. So even if you look at it askance as a big government program which seeks to change the way we do care, we should give it credit for the way it's accelerating what we all knew we needed to do anyway.
So if suppose you're going to a goal which keeps changing and or moving, perhaps that may not be the case, but that could be one of the perceptions there. Would you ever reach to that target? And even if you accelerate and go 500 miles an hour, would you ever get there?
I liked what Bill said a minute ago, and that we're going to be implementing these from now until forever. So even when we get where we thought was there, by the time we get there, there will be new demands from our patients and from the physicians and nurses that we serve for better exchange of information and better ways to document and coordinate the care. So it doesn't matter what speed we go, it can never be fast enough because we will always expect higher and higher capability.
And there are some things that still have to be resolved. We are moving towards the adoption of more complete sets of standards so that we're communicating on like terms among the care.
You're fading out a little bit.
I'm sorry. I'll try to speak a little bit more loudly. The development of standards so that providers are communicating in like terms around the care community is progressing, but we still aren't there yet. We have three different drug databases that drive electronic health record systems, and they are not totally reconciled yet, so that when I communicate a drug from product A to product B, it may not be interpreted exactly the way it needs to be. And some, just as an example. And so those things will be resolved over time, but it's going to be a gradual evolution. And we have differences in language among care providers in terms of what they call a procedure. And so as we're developing what is called semantic interoperability so that we can translate what I call a chest X-ray to what you call a chest X-ray, for example, until we have that complete, there will be difficulties in translation, but we are But there's a lot of work, and we are improving on that score.
So when we talk about the catalyst, which is the federal government, and they talk about the stimulus money, they also talk about meaningful use. And that's when you would start seeing the money. But they want us to fork the money before on infrastructure, on processes, on people, et cetera, et cetera. Who is ready to do it, and is the incentive of conversion or are the benefits of conversion into an EHR format compelling enough for someone to say, you know what, I've got other expenses, but I'll drop everything, I'll put into an EHR program?
I've heard anecdotal conversations about physician practices that may do an electronic medical record in a practice because there is stimulus money to be had. But I think that more realistically, this developing an EMR is something that physician practices and hospitals knew they had to do and were making a decision long before the stimulus program came along. And from what I've seen from my CIO colleagues, few health systems are changing the trajectory of what they're doing either. They knew that they needed to do an EMR. They made a decision. I would posit that an EMR decision is never a positive ROI. We can get down to trying to prove that we're more efficient or that we save nursing time or that it's easier to read handwriting, but except for the most critical piece, which is improving the quality and the care of our patients, it's difficult, and I think in many ways false, to try to back into a return on investment for doing one of these. So as health systems, we were making these decisions more because we needed to, not because it was a good investment in the first place. Now that the stimulus plan has come along, in many ways it is just reinforcing what we had planned to do anyway, perhaps getting us to do it 6 or 12 months earlier, but I don't think in any way changing the trajectory of at least what big health systems were doing. And I'd love to hear what Bill thinks about that.
Bill?
I would agree with Daniel's comments. I think that most health systems have already started making investments in their electronic health record, and we clearly may have differences in perspective in terms of the sequence that meaningful use, the meaningful use definition would have us implement. You know, there's been lots of controversy about physician order entry, computerized physician order entry, because it's difficult to do because it's a large change initiative. But for health systems, I believe that most of us have been in progress for quite some time. I think that for private practicing physicians, it will really move them forward more quickly than they had anticipated, in that the statistics show that probably less than 20% of physician offices are automated, and there are many, many physicians who are saying, now is the time for me to do it, because there is some money on the table, and because in a few years, if I don't move forward, I will face some penalties, and I will look a little bit obsolete in terms of my practice, absent an electronic record. So I would believe that probably for physician practices, the stimulus will have a more remarkable effect than for progressive health systems.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages and see if EHR being a brick, what castle are we building? Where are we trying to go? What's that holy grail that we are trying to reach? And so if EHR doesn't happen or it happens forever, as has been discussed, as it's a continuous improvement, will there be ever a holy grail that we can achieve, or the final castle that we will ever look at? Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network.
The
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval, A-V-V-A-L, aval.com. Visit today.
Dialogue is the single most powerful leadership tool we have to make a difference in the world. Leading Conversations with host Cheryl Esposito creates a place for that dialogue. Tune into the Voice America Business Channel every Friday as Cheryl hosts new conversations among leaders from around the world in business, government, art, economics, and social change. We'll explore big ideas and everyday actions and learn how their own leadership has led them to discover a newfound sense of possibility in the world. Leading Conversations with Cheryl Esposito, bringing big thinkers together in conversations that make a difference, right here on the Voice America Business Channel, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Stop wasting time. Get what you want. Live your dream life. The Dream Big Revolution. Imagine having more freedom, better health, more money, happiness. Could your business be more successful? Unless you're living the life you want, you're wasting precious time. Your life is too valuable to waste. Let Leanne Hilgers help you find health, wealth, and happiness. Listen in and live your dream life. Join the Dream Big Revolution. Tune in every Tuesday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time, on the Seventh Wave Network.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back, folks. So we're talking about EHR, and if this is one of the bricks that we are laying, which castle are we building, Bill?
I think we're building this vision where the patient's information is going to be totally available to the clinician, irregardless of the venue. We've been building our electronic health records within our enterprises today. At the same time, we haven't done a complete job of really extending them out to the physicians in the community or to our neighboring hospitals should the patient happen to appear there for care. And as we're building this larger castle, it's really an interconnected castle whereby the patient is really the center, regardless of where he or she gets their care.
So, Daniel, what do you think?
I like Bill's point. The sad thing is, as forward-thinking as the ARRA plan is and the work that health systems like Carilion and Sharp are doing to build these EMRs, it's still possible to be fully compliant and succeed both on certification and meaningful use and get dollars, and do very little in the way of reaching out to other health systems. So we originally thought, I think the nation thought, that when we built this electronic medical record system as envisioned by the government starting last year, that by the time we were done, we would be fully interconnected with our information, almost as interchangeable as our ATM cards are. And unfortunately, at least for the next few years, it looks like we can all get by with just continuing to build internally in our own silos without doing much other than a couple tests in the way of interconnectivity. And that's something we're going to have to overcome at some point because as a patient, I have high standards for how my data is handled and what my physician does with it. But as an IT exec, I know that we don't always live up to those expectations.
Is this truly a cohesive initiative where every healthcare partner and or provider and everybody else in the value chain player are truly working towards this, or is this like everybody fending for their rights and kind of going in silo mode? what's the trend that you guys see there? Yeah.
I would say that it's a little of both. Our legacy is competition. This is a capitalist free enterprise society, and one of the most challenging things is for us to establish agreements in terms of how we're going to share information with our neighbors, and concerns that our neighbors may try to steal our patients if we give them too much information, and you hear conversations like that. But I think that the real value of the High Tech Act was that it's really forcing us to have these conversations. It's pushing us in ways that we just never have gone before. We've approached them. They've been tough politically, and so we've walked away from them. And Daniel is absolutely right that the first stage of the meaningful use requirements doesn't really move us very far towards the connectivity across organizations. It does at least get us started, and I think we can expect that stage two is going to be much more demanding than stage one.
That's right. To this point, if you can think of three different levels that we focus on, one is as service providers and business people in our local communities, we certainly want to deliver good health care, but we want a certain set of patients. We want to attract patients and be successful. From an IT perspective, we have our head down trying to build the tools so that the physicians can do just that. And internally, it doesn't really matter about our ability to connect with one another. So if you go above those two levels, we almost look to either the government or the vendors whose products we use to lead us in a way that is more interconnected. And the challenge is, even something as simple as definition of a common data set requires a whole lot of conversations across a whole lot of vendors. And after several years, we still don't have a national standard for even a basic snapshot of information, the kind that you would expect to be able to go from one health system in one state to an emergency department in another state when you show up there. So we have our heads down doing the basic business of delivering healthcare and IT, and yet even at a national level and among the big vendors whose products that we purchase, there isn't enough conversation and agreement about where we're going next.
There isn't, is what you're saying.
Is not.
Okay. So which essentially is a problem right there, at least one of the big problems, that without communication among all the parties that are going to be impacting this whole EHR program or will be driving, if they don't talk to each other, God bless all of us.
True. I think that in the High Tech Act and the ARRA program, the federal government could have taken two approaches. They could have said, okay, everybody stop, get out of the pool, and wait 2 or 5 or 7 years until we come up with standards. And once we have it nailed, then we're going to go, everybody hop back in and we're going to play. And obviously that wasn't a choice. So we're trying to get everybody up and doing something they haven't done before, electronic health records, at the same time we're defining the standards. And it's producing result as you might expect. It is bifurcated. There are a lot of standards. There are a lot of conversations going on about what those standards should be. Little agreement. There are going to be winners and losers. I would say that it is more vendors that are going to be winners or losers because, quite frankly, I don't think that any health system or physician practice cares what the standards look like behind the scenes. They just want a tool that works when they're sitting down looking a patient in the eyes. If it works behind the scenes so that we communicate well across vendors, we would all much prefer that.
I would agree with that. And we have to recognize that we've...
Are you fading out?
I'm sorry. We have to really recognize that we have a legacy among our vendor community because interoperability wasn't demanded, that each of these vendors have built their systems historically in a rather closed manner so that they work well with their own parts, but they don't necessarily communicate as well with a competing vendor product. But we are making progress today. I mean, I was really happy a week ago to have been in the room with my hospital EHR vendor and my physician EHR vendor and had them penciling out how they're going to perform interoperability among their two products. That's something that 5 years ago never would have happened. And I'm sure that these conversations are happening elsewhere because we realize that we have to accomplish this.
We should all be happy for the small victories that Bill is talking about. Just in the past month, we've been able to put together a comprehensive picture of what even the basics of our patients look like. Certainly on every individual patient, we know all about their medical history and their shots and their allergies. But across all patients, it's been very difficult to put together a picture of how often are the 40 to 58-year-olds admitted to our emergency departments? How often are our Medicare patients older than 65 readmitted to our hospitals? Why are they readmitted? And we never had that type of macroeconomic data that allowed us to change the way we practice. Certainly for every Mr. and Mrs. Smith, we could take care of them as an individual, but we didn't have the data at our fingertips to do what I think is probably more important in healthcare, which is create system-wide and then regional and then national standards for different elements of care and tweak so that we're all performing them the same way and generally improving healthcare for the nation as a whole.
Now, we know that CIO's life was never with 2 weeks vacation planned out and you were able to take those. Has that become any better or worse with EHR?
I would have to claim not guilty on that. I think that we've always had a hectic life. I think that today we probably are even working harder than we did a few years ago. But we have to admit that it's really an exciting time for us, and we're really motivated to accomplish this journey to really bring better healthcare to our patients through technology.
I would agree. It's an exciting time to be doing this. You know, my family and I really enjoy watching the Olympics. One thing that I notice is the people that are standing on the podiums, generally it's rare that the phenom pops up and wins a gold medal. It's often this is their second or even third Olympics. To answer your question about the CIO's role and the ability to take a step back, if we were all doing this for the first time, it would be impossible. But we have experienced, and I'm sure Bill and his team have seen, that having implemented an emergency department system in 2001 and an OR system in 2003 and a physician practice system 10 years ago, we've done this two or three times. So this is not the first electronic health system or first time that we've tried to tie them together. So that we have people at this point who are just so talented at doing this. There's a national conversation about the dearth of IT healthcare talent out there. You know, that may be true for programming points or certain DBAs and other skills, but in terms of real team leaders and managers who've been doing this for the past 5 or 10 or 15 years, that skill set is out there, and they've done it many times, and now they're just doing it at a varsity level, and it allows guys like me to stand back and marvel at the talents of the people who can get it done, and actually allows me to focus more on the strategic vision and working to make sure we as a health system are focused on the big picture.
Daniel mentioned earlier that we seldom see a true return on investment for our technology investments. And you know, and that is really true because it's because the technology is expensive, because it's really hard to change, you know, change behavior, change practice, to really take full advantage of the technology. But something that we have in front of us with the High Tech Act is for the very first time that the results of our labor will bring some tangible financial rewards back to our organizations as well. So the whole organization is sitting up and taking notice and saying, you know, the result of this CIO and his or her team's work will be very important to us financially. And so return on investment, absolutely there. And, you know, that puts us in a lot different light in terms of, you know, our satisfaction that we were actually bringing something back tangibly to the organization. And similarly, it puts the pressure on us to deliver in a way that it might not have been before as well.
Sure.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages and see if the EHR program itself and, of course, the subsequent programs that we will implement or in parallel, are they primarily a top-line growth-oriented initiatives, or are they bottom-line savings-oriented initiatives? Where does the healthcare want to leverage this the most, and what are the end results that we are hoping to achieve after we, say, have reached at least a critical mass at which some EHR has happened? So please stay tuned. We'll be right back and discuss. We'll be right back.
whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval, A-V-V-A-L, aval.com. Visit today.
Have questions about wind power? Listen for the TLG Wind Power Hour with Terry from TLG Wind Power Products. He'll cover the ins and outs of wind energy with you, whether you're a do-it-yourselfer or want a ready-made product. Let Terry give you the know-how and understanding of making wind energy work for you. Terry will share decades of hands-on experience so that you don't have to learn about wind power the hard way. The TLG Wind Power Hour, live every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Green Talk Network.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back. So EHR... And other initiatives that we are trying to put together to see better health and better healthcare delivery, et cetera, et cetera. Where is the focus? Is it more top line growth is what we want to get out of this, or more bottom line savings? Because for some reason the revenues have not been increasing as much. At least some people say that. So what's going on from that standpoint? Where is the focus, Bill?
Well, I think there's a combination. I think that there is some growth aspect because we believe that the better provider we are, in the more that we lead with modern technology, the more that we will attract patients to our hospital versus the neighbor's hospital, or our physician office versus the neighbor's physician office. But very clearly, in this era where we are talking about health reform, and health reform will inevitably come, that this whole issue of bending the cost curve is important. And everyone believes, there's no one who doesn't believe, that we have to have technology in place in order to really change the way healthcare works and to over time reduce the costs, or at least reduce the increasing rate of costs in healthcare. So it is a little bit of both. If you look at the investments that we make around the EHR, it's to get the information to the caregiver so that they can make their decisions more quickly and hopefully get their patient well more quickly, or it's to improve the productivity of the caregiver. And those are both quality-driven and they're cost-driven.
Daniel?
Our CEO is an MD as well, and he has good insights for physician behavior and how we tend to treat patients. And one of the most interesting things he says is that our culture in healthcare is that the other doctor treats patients with a certain condition in a certain way. I treat patients with the exact same condition in a completely different way. But you know what? Her way of doing it is fine, and my way of doing it is fine. We're completely different, but both approaches are fine. And an engineering approach would say, you know, there's probably one best practice or one standard around which our patients have the best outcome, and if you wanted to look at it from an economic perspective, is the best treatment per dollar spent. So one of the things that EHR is doing for us and will continue to do over time is standardize the way we practice. It is going to become more and more difficult to order the outlying test or the outlying procedure when, for condition X, I as a physician have three different choices in front of me, with the one recommended, say, by the AMA in bold. And so I think both from a top line attracting more patients with better outcomes and bottom line saving dollars, I think standardization is something which doesn't get enough press, which EHRs are pushing us to. The risk, of course, is that we don't want to get to cookbook medicine. And I'm not a physician myself, so I have the utmost respect in physicians who say we don't need to get all the way there. It's a fine line to walk, but I think standardization around best practices is really key, and EHRs are an unheralded tool in that area.
As IT leaders, are you looking up to someone or a group or an entity to provide you the guidance and support to go about doing the best job you can? Are you required to, follow someone? Of course, maybe not required to, but would you like to, as an IT leader, get some sort of a sounding board so that you know you're going in the right direction, given that you're not a healthcare practitioner? Dan, Daniel?
One of the things I like about this community is the openness. Although we compete for patients, we tend to compete in a pretty discrete geographic area. But across the nation are great health systems and talented CIOs. And I think Bill probably has the same experience I do. When we've got a problem, I pick up the phone and call somebody else and ask them. And so I've got a network of five or six folks that I'll pick up the phone and call on any given day and ask them how they're doing something. And they do the same for me. And in that way, we don't have one common organization or national leader that we look up to, but there is a great network of everybody trying to improve patient care, save money, and work together to do so.
And I would even add to that to say that these are our CIO colleagues as well as our vendor colleagues. Clearly the vendors have different motivation in terms of the profit incentive. They clearly bring to us best practices that they see at other client sites, and we look to them for that. Sometimes we need to do that just to determine whether our approach is really reasonable and is likely to succeed in the community.
When a vendor would propose a best practice, is it truly a best practice, or is it somewhat tilted towards making a sale their way?
I wouldn't say making a sale their way, because typically we already have the system.
Okay.
But it may be to allow us to allow their system to best support the practice that we implement, recognizing that different systems, different computer applications are built with different workflows. And, it's becoming more and more common for organizations to implement a sort of a best practice structured methodology manner to not only complete the implementations in a shorter time span, but to assure that we are actually using the system in the way that it will best support our practice. And, you do get into that debate in terms of whether you're having to change your practice to fit the vendor's product or whether the vendor's product is supporting you. But I think that, the truth is in the middle ground.
Would you say there are any top items in those list of, missing pieces of the puzzle, if you will, that if were available, you could really, charge ahead without much of a challenge and or, say, with minimal challenges?
I think for me, national standards are something which I really hope are going to be better defined, because sometimes it feels like we are leading our vendors as much as they are giving us tools. We look to them, like Bill said, to help us out, and they don't know, in many cases, any better than we do. And in some cases, we find that as the people with the real sick patients in our emergency departments, we have better insight for what works and what doesn't, and I think the same is true when it comes to interconnectivity of data. I think we have a good sense of what is realistic for time delays, whether it's in real time or what format the data comes in, and our vendors might not always have that insight, but if neither of us have a national standard to follow, we're not working towards anything better than just implementing the systems that are in place today. I think acceleration of development of national standards, both for sharing and a common data set, are really key.
Bill?
I would absolutely second that. And I think part of our dilemma is that the community providers really have probably the richest experience in practical application, and yet the community providers are probably operating with the tightest margins, and so we can less participate in the development of those standards. And so we find ourselves frequently observing that the standards are being driven by vendors whose interests aren't necessarily aligned with ours, or driven by research organizations that don't really have the on-the-ground practical experience that we believe that we would have. So we need the standards, and we need to find a venue where we're comfortable that these standards are really supporting the broadest base of providers around the nation.
I think Bill makes a great point. Both he and I are working at very large health systems which are dedicated to developing electronic medical records which meet the needs of our patients, and we have the luxury of having sharp people who can get it done and build interfaces and solve problems. But Bill makes the point that the provider in the community, the solo practitioner, the five-physician practice, you know, they should expect that they can buy a product and it's going to do what they need. It is unfathomable that we have these physicians who are working hard and seeing patients and then are expected to take the time to think, okay, I just bought this EMR and it's working okay, but now I have to think, do I have to pay to develop an interface to get my lab resources and lab results in here? Do I have to pay extra money or come up with a way so that I can share the images with the provider down the street, or to get a copy of that CT report back from the local hospital that I send my patient to? These smaller physician practice have a lot harder time than the big healthcare organizations like we work for, and yet I don't think their needs are being met by the delay in development of these national standards.
Now, assume that these standards get developed. Then would you come back and say, you know what, I kick myself for becoming proactive and started earlier, and then I'll have to rework now because the standards are different than what I thought they will be. So would there be any suggestions related to waiting versus just charging ahead without having a standard in place?
I really believe that we have to move ahead because it's our experience that's going to help us determine the best standards. I think it might be nice to have a greenfield implementation in a perfect world, but I think the delay in terms of bringing the benefit to our patients would be enormous. And I think the experience that we gain through these troubles that we describe is invaluable in reaching the right conclusions. And I mean, even incomplete information is better than no information, I think.
True.
So in terms of lack of direction or less of a direction that we have, would you qualify it as total darkness or haziness?
You know, at this point, I think we have to be thankful that there is at least a federal program to provide funding to get us moving forward. And Bill makes a very good point that if the dollars weren't there, certainly with the challenges we're facing in healthcare reimbursement and cuts in Medicaid reimbursement these days, there would be fewer and fewer dollars to allow him and me and other healthcare IT leaders to do what we're trying to do. I wouldn't say that the light that we're following is really clear. Certainly there are goals that we've been giving and meaningful use standards, which are even still to this day being debated whether these are going to be the final ones or not. So we don't really know what the future looks like other than we have to go further than where we are today. Part of this federal program itself is literally just giving us the vision to do what we need to do. The example I like to use is that when President Kennedy announced in 1961 that we wanted to send a man to the moon and return him safely in the next 9 years by the end of the 60s, at that point we as humans had collectively two spaceflights totaling about 25,000 miles. And the moon is, you know, 250,000 miles. So we'd gone about one-tenth of the way in space at any time that we needed to go to get to the moon. Similarly, when the high-tech plan came out with a goal of getting everybody to electronic medical records by 2017, at that point, David Blumenthal had published an article in the New England Journal of Medicine that said only about 1.5% of hospitals nationwide and only about 4% of physician practices nationwide were using electronic medical records in any meaningful way. So in some ways, trying to get everybody to an electronic medical record is almost more aggressive than the moon landing was back in the 60s. So we have a long, long way to go. There's a lot of work to do. The standards are in many ways undefined, but at least we have a collective vision that we need to do something in dollars to do it.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back and discuss about the capability and reliability of the infrastructure that's available. And, of course, with the two guests that we have here, they have large healthcare system with some resources which allows them to keep investing in their infrastructure and applications and integration. But how about some people who are not as fortunate, but they also are part of the big system that we all have to put in place and you know, consolidate? And so how is that whole thing going to come together? And if we are going to be investing in those areas with respect to infrastructure and capability and reliability of that, what is going to be the outcome, or what's the guarantee of the outcome for which someone would invest? So please stay tuned. We'll be right back and explore.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval, A-V-V-A-L, aval.com. Visit today.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjoy Gall.
Welcome back. So let's talk about the infrastructure that's there and what is going to be required for the final nirvana when it comes to EHR. The current capability and reliability of what we have today, if that's not enough, then there will be investment required, and not everyone has the resources that perhaps the two of you may have. What's your suggestions to the rest of the world? Bill.
I would argue that there are lots of opportunities. Clearly, for a small practice, their infrastructure may be lighter, and they may not have the redundancy built into their systems that we as a larger system are able to or required to afford. However, there are a number of options in terms of, well, I guess the popular term is cloud computing, but in terms of really hosting your applications in hardened data centers with redundancy. And there are many options available, you know, especially for small practices to subscribe to an EHR service for a period of time, so that there is a large, solid EHR provider actually supporting you in those services. Very clearly, as we've moved from paper to electronic, that the demand for full-time, real-time availability is important. And we've gone in the last 10 years from the discussion of worrying about unscheduled downtime to limiting scheduled downtime, because the record has got to be available to our patients. And you know, and I would have to say that I'm not satisfied even today with the amount of time that we have to schedule for maintenance on our system, and we're trying all the time to reduce that so that the caregivers have those patient records available to them at all times. You know, it's something that we will continue to work on, and it's a huge source of investments in terms of redundancy and in terms of improved processes and in terms of software changes to limit the unavailability of your systems.
Daniel?
I think it's a lot to ask a solo practitioner or even a small group practice to both be skilled at what they do and also be technically adept enough to purchase the right system and have the right team in place to maintain it. I agree with Bill that there ought to be products out there, and I think that there are, that allow physicians to focus on what they do and get their EMR delivered as a service. You asked originally what they should focus on first. I think the basics. You know, you could argue that you can deliver great care, and great care has been delivered for a long period of time with just paper. So what does electronic interface give a physician first? Well, results, quicker access to results and data, and perhaps information about the patient from other sources that they didn't have before. I think what's encouraging is the kind of complaints that we hear these days are not, I don't want to use the EMR, or it doesn't work for me. It's, hey, I need more information. I want information from the local imaging center down the street. I want my data presented in a certain way. It's almost as if the complaint is that it's 30 years ago and they have manila envelopes as a patient medical record, and the problem is it's a messy manila envelope. It's all there. Every shred of information about the patient is there, but it's a jumble of information, and we need to make it cleaner. It's encouraging to me that we're getting complaints that it's a little difficult to go through the EMR. I need to be able to access the results better or quickly find something. But nobody will, at least in an integrated EMR, nobody will state that it's not there anymore. It's a question of how we use what's there. And that's the challenge for solo and group practices, getting themselves on a product that gets them all of the data quickly and efficiently without investing a whole lot in IT.
Now, are the people ready? While we may have the technology, your internal crew who are supposed to be delivering the results, especially from an IT standpoint, as well as the healthcare, are they up to speed, or what are the challenges that you see to bring them up to speed and scale and scope?
I think that from the physician and nurse perspective, I'm really proud of how I have seen physicians and other clinicians respond. We put tools in their hands, and initially they're reluctant to use them because it's a change of scope in how they practice. But, you know, at this point, we have 92-93% adoption of CPOE throughout a system. And to give the credit to the physicians for adopting the system that makes it safer for patients, you just can't thank them enough. The challenge is making sure that the tools work for them and then we give them the training necessary to use them quickly. We as IT people tend to build systems and put them out there. They make the human interface and make them work in the physician practice is the challenge these days.
Bill?
I think that we
you're fading out, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry. We can look at it from both the IT professional staff perspective and our clinical staff. And I would agree 100% with Daniel's comments. Our clinicians are really excited and happy to have these modern tools available for them. There certainly are a few naysayers in the group, but for the most part, the large majority of the clinicians really are excited to have this kind of information at their disposal. In terms of how we enable them as IT workers, it's a very exciting time for them in that they really are able to see the results of their efforts. We provide a lot of training to our staff to make sure that they're right, that they have the best skills that they possibly can have, and that they're able to really serve their customers in the best ways, and so that they're able to take advantage of the most modern, not only technologies, but techniques. We are implementing, you know, the common methodologies that are in use in IT across many industries, and we see the benefits from it, so that we provide a better and better product for our users or our customers all the time.
On behalf of the show and our listeners, I'd really like to thank you, Bill and Daniel, for sharing your thoughts on how EHR, that dream of EHR, can be realized. And yes, let's not expect that it'll happen in 1 year. It will take a number of years for us to see the final grant, you know, the holy grail, if you will. But then we are working towards it.
Great. Thanks for your time, Sanjog. I enjoyed it.
Thank you, Sanjog. This was good.
Thank you so much again. And viewer listeners, if you have any thoughts, please send us an email to views@ciotalkradio.com. That is views@ciotalkradio.com. Thank you again for listening to CIO Talk Radio. This is Sanjog Gall, your talk show host. Till next week, take care and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Join Sanjog Gall next Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific for another hour of CIO Talk Radio.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.